Google Cloud had an outage. Hackers are using Discord to spread malware. WWDC 25, Xbox coming out with a new handheld, and UNFI was breached. Let's talk about it.
This video will be sponsored by SNHU. So it's 2025 and cybersecurity is still all the rage. Breaches are at an all-time high and so are cyber salaries. But there's a problem you keep running into. Cyber jobs you want to land are requiring a degree and you don't have one. Let me introduce you to today's sponsor, Southern New Hampshire University, SNHU. SNHU has a flexible online program that also touts one of the lowest tuitions in the country. SNHU is an affordable, accredited, nonprofit university that has dedicated career advisors, webinars, internships, and more to prepare you to enter or advance in the workforce. There's a 32% projected growth of information security analyst roles through 2032. And according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, the median security analyst salary in 2023 was $120,000. In SNHU's program, you can learn about these critical subjects: cybersecurity foundations, networking, incident response, risk management, enterprise security, and more. As a cybersecurity professional, these are all important courses. If you would like to know more about SNHU's program, then please visit snhu.edu/textual or click the link below in the description.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to the Textual Talk Podcast. I'm your host, HD. Doing a solo episode today. It is Father's Day, and I know it's been a while since I did an episode. My co-host is traveling today, but I love talking to y'all, so I hope y'all like listening. But first and foremost, if you are listening on any podcast player, please like us, follow, and leave a comment. It'll really help us out. And if you're still watching the video, all you got to do is hit the like button. That's all I'm asking for. So you guys know that I dropped that PMP episode last week. It's different for the channel, so I feel like it's going to do good over the duration of it being on the channel, but it's very different. But if you're interested in being a project manager, please check out that video. A lot of gems. It talks about people who don't think they have project manager experience, but they actually do, and how you can get into the field. So I definitely just like giving you guys value, so check that out. I don't know what I want to get into first, man. It was a lot of good topics, some different things that I really hadn't talked about a lot on this channel, but I want to kind of broaden my horizons as I am interested in multiple things, but I also like to still keep it about tech news, business news, you name it. So I think the biggest one to start with right now is the Google Cloud outage. So if you're not aware, on Thursday, Google Cloud had a massive outage. I don't think it lasted too long, but it was enough for people to notice that, hey, stuff not working. Let's get into the article and see what it talks about. All right. So Google links massive cloud outage to API management issue. Google says an API management issue is behind Thursday's massive Google Cloud outage, which disrupted or brought down its services and many other online platforms. Google says the cloud outage started around 10:49 Eastern time and ended at 3:49 Eastern after causing issues for millions of users worldwide for over 3 hours. So that is major. 3 hours, that's a lot. That's crazy. Besides Google Cloud, the incident also impacted Gmail, Google Calendar, Google Chat, Google Cloud Search, Google Docs, Google Drive, Google Meet, Google Tasks, Google Voice, Google Lens, Discover, and Voice Search. However, it also caused widespread issues for third-party platforms that rely on Google Cloud, including but not limited to Spotify, Discord, Snapchat, NPM, Firebase Studio, and limited number of Cloudflare services relying on the workers' KV Key Value Store. We are deeply sorry for the impact to all of our users and their customers that this service disruption outage caused. Businesses large and small trust Google Cloud with your workloads, and we will do better. While they're still working on publishing a full incident report, Google revealed today the root cause of what caused an increased number of 503 errors and an external API request during yesterday's three-hour-long outage. As the company explained today, its Google Cloud API management platform failed due to the invalid data, an issue that wasn't discovered and remediated promptly because it lacked effective testing and error handling systems. Where have we heard that before? From our initial analysis, the issue occurred due to an invalid automated quota update to our API management system, which was distributed globally, causing external API requests to be rejected. To recover, we bypassed the offending quota check, which allowed recovery in most regions within 2 hours, the company added. However, the quota policy database in US Central 1 became overloaded, resulting in much longer recovery in that region. Several products had moderate residual impact backlogs for up to an hour after the primary issue was mitigated and a small number recovery after that. Man, that's crazy. And I think, like, we've been talking about in a couple of episodes how this is why companies are deciding to do a lot more hybrid environments, because if you are relying on Google Cloud for everything and you don't have a backup, let's say it took longer than 3 hours, you can lose a lot of money. And so that's why you start seeing people want to take hold of their infrastructure a little bit more, where they're kind of moving away from some of this stuff and going back to on-prem and their own data centers, which why it could be wise to invest in data centers as well. Cloudflare service is taking down my Google's outage. After successfully restoring its own impacted services, Cloudflare also revealed in a post-mortem that yesterday's incident was not caused by a security incident and that no data was lost. The cause of this outage was due to a failure in the underlying storage infrastructure used by our workers' KV service, which is a critical dependency for many Cloudflare products and relied upon for configuration, authentication, and asset delivery across the affected services, Cloudflare said. Part of this infrastructure is backed up by a third-party cloud provider, which experienced an outage today and directly impacted the availability of our KV service. Even though it didn't share the name of the cloud provider behind the Thursday outage, a Cloudflare spokesperson told Bleeping Computer yesterday that only Cloudflare services relying on Google Cloud were affected. In response to this incident, Cloudflare says it will migrate KV Central Store to its own R2 object stores to reduce external dependency and prevent similar issues in the future. See? You got to own your stuff. This is not acceptable by any upper management or leadership, executive leadership. They will see this and say, we cannot afford this to happen again. So I thought that was pretty insightful. I think I was busy or something at the time, so I didn't even notice the outage with like some of the products that were out. But if you did, leave a comment below and tell me, I guess, what service or platform you were using and you noticed like it wasn't working for a period of time. But that is kind of crazy. And things like that just make you think about the whole scheme of things. If something like the electrical grid or things were taken down, and in this case, it don't even have to be 3 hours. It could be 3 minutes. How crazy it would be if you'd not be able to search or see or do anything for 3 minutes. That'd be crazy. But while we're on Google, there was another thing I saw about Google, and I believe, let me see if I can find it. It was a hacker found a way to find private phone numbers of people used for their Google accounts. Let me see if I can find it, because I thought this was interesting. Google fixes a bug that could reveal users' private phone numbers. A security researcher has discovered a bug that could be exploited to reveal the private recovery phone number of almost any Google account without alerting its owner, potentially exposing users to privacy and security risks. Google confirmed to TechCrunch that it fixed the bug after the researcher alerted the company in April. The independent researcher, who goes by the handle Brutecat, and blogged their findings, told TechCrunch that they could obtain the recovery phone number of a Google account by exploiting a bug in the company's account recovery feature. The exploit relied on an attack chain of several individual processes working in tandem, including leaking the full display name of a targeted account and bypassing an anti-bot protection mechanism that Google implemented to prevent the malicious spamming of password reset requests, bypassing the rate limit, ultimately allowing the researcher to cycle through every possible permutation of a Google account's phone number in a short space of time and arrive at the correct digits. Now, when you're interviewing for security roles, one of the things you have to talk about is, and I've said this in plenty of episodes, but when you're talking and an interviewer is asking you a question, it's best to just say, on the side of precaution, say 9 out of 10, we've already been breached, but the hackers have not made their move. The difference between the defenders and the attackers is the attackers have way more time on their hands to figure these things out than you do, because you're defending so many different things and they're focused on one thing. So that's something to always remember and keep in your mind. By automating the attack chain with the script, the researcher said it was possible to brute force a Google account owner's recovery phone number in 20 minutes or less, depending on the length of the phone number. To test this, TechCrunch set up a new Google account with a phone number that had never been used before, then provided Brutecat with the email address of our new Google account. A short time later, Brutecat messaged back with the phone number that we had set, and he sent the message that said bingo with a smiley face. Revealing the private recovery phone number can expose even anonymous Google accounts to targeted attacks, such as takeover attempts. Identifying a private phone number associated with someone's Google account could make it easier for skilled hackers to take control of that phone number through a SIM swap attack. For example, with the control of their phone number, the attacker can reset the password of any account associated with their phone number by generating password reset codes sent to their phone. Given a potential risk to wider public, TechCrunch agreed to hold this story until the bug could be fixed. This issue has been fixed. We've always stressed the importance of working with the security research community through our vulnerability rewards program, and we want to thank the researcher for flagging this issue. Google spokesperson Kimberly Samuel told TechCrunch, researcher submissions like this are one of the many ways we're able to quickly find and fix issues for the safety of our users. Samuel said that the company has seen no confirmed direct links to exploits at the time. Brutecat said Google paid $5,000 and a bug bounty reward for this finding. Now, Google, y'all got all that money. Y'all paid that man $5,000. Y'all should have added another zero to that. That should have been $50,000. Ain't no way possible, because he would have made more money exploiting it and selling it to people versus what you paid them. So do better with your bug bounty. It don't cost nothing for y'all. That's a write-off. Come on, man. 5 G's for Google? Like, that's crazy, bro. Guys, I also want to tell you, like, sometimes in a job search, it's not you. It's companies playing games. They're losing funding. They already knew who they wanted, and so they just posted the job anyway. So sometimes, no matter what you did, you were not going to get that role. And so just remember that if you're getting down on yourself, like, and one thing you could do. You did everything you could do, but they wanted to play games. But for compliance reasons, they had to post it, which I think is dumb. Change compliance like that so you don't have people applying to jobs that y'all didn't plan to hire anybody external for anyway. That way, nobody got to waste their time. Like, nobody should have to harass recruiters for things that they sent them about following up or tell them about next steps, and they never get next steps. And you're like, what's going on? And that's how people crash out, and they go on LinkedIn, and they just start talking about companies. Now, I actually agree with that method, but I don't agree with it because companies look at it from a different perspective because they feel like you're doing them like that. But at the same time, stop doing people wrong. People cared enough to either interview with you or apply, and you're talking to them and you stop talking to them. The least you could do is that. Like, what's going on here? That's the type of stuff that make people go to people's headquarters and find out where these people are and just get an answer or talk to somebody who's like, hey, I don't appreciate that. I don't. I've been talking to y'all the whole time, and then you just stop talking to me, and I know you see the emails. But, man, it's crazy. But one of the things I actually wanted to talk about is the Xbox Game Showcase. And let me see, where is it? I think I got it over here. Now, I didn't pay attention to most of it. I think the thing that stole the show was the new Xbox, what is it, Rogue Ally game handheld? Let's go check it out. Let's go look at it. So as you can see, they display all these games, which is some cool games. So on the showcase, let's see. I've never played these Outer World games. I don't even know what that is. Now, the Gears of War is one of my all-time favorite franchises. If you have not played Gears of War story alone is top tier. Gameplay with that, too, is like, I'm not a shooting person game, but this type of shooter is third-person shooter, and I just like it. Like, it's all about being smart, taking cover, and you just can't, you know, run out there and try to shoot people, you're going to die. But these are like some cool games. I think I've seen Ninja Gaiden 4. But see, so here's the biggest thing. Rogue Xbox Ally X, Rogue Xbox Ally. So let's see what this is talking about. Okay. Next gen power in your hands. Let's see if they got a video or something. This is cool though. Like, this would be for, I mean, but you know what? I don't really have a lot of time to play games or whatever, but if I did want to play, you know, I know this is definitely going to eat into the Switch's market share because Xbox is like, look, we probably never going to win the console war, so we're going to go in like this and let you play on, I think you can play Xbox anywhere. So on here, you can play on a computer, you can play on a console, anywhere it says like games you play. I think, let's see if it explains it. There we go. Yeah. Power Xbox, freedom of Windows, craftsmanship of ROG. So that's cool. Progress grows with you. Yeah, so Switch got to do something. South of Midnight right here. And I'm pretty sure outside of this, the next thing they're going to have would be maybe kind of like some type of Chromecast type of device. Not necessarily the Chromecast, but something that plugs into HDMI. that's more of a streaming thing. That's not like necessarily a big console. Like, I know Google had the Stadia, which nobody even talks about anymore. But if you've been playing Xbox for the last couple of years, Xbox has really went in on the Xbox Game Cloud, and it's pretty good. I mean, you have some performance issues here and there. That's going to either based on your connection on the back end of Azure with the cloud moving. But for the most part, it's pretty good. And so I could tell like they were ready to make a jump for something like this. So this is pretty cool. I actually see. Oh, look at this. This is cool. But yeah. I can also see where this could also help lead into more security roles as well, because as you start having people playing more and more online on different devices, then you're opening up your platform even more for people to start trying to attack it and things like that. So I think that'll also help. So people will be just trying to do more things to Xbox. Now, a fun topic I wanted to do is, this is actually going to be more reactionary, but there's always these talks on X or wherever about Black women managers, right? And how Black women prefer a white man manager. And I get it, because, you know, these are all their, you know, their experiences that they've actually experienced with certain people, right? And I believe this has an age type of thing too, like people who are born in the maybe early 70s, late 60s, 50s. Some of those people were different based on how they were raised and what they wanted to probably do to the women, or maybe they were hating on them. And it's all nuance, right? I don't know, and I would love to, the Black women who dealt with this issue, I definitely want you to comment on the video right here. If you could tell me a little bit about the demographics of your supervisor, your manager. Were they married? Were they not married? How were they? Were they pretty? Were they ugly? Were you pretty? Were you ugly? All these different things, right? Because, I mean, let's be honest. We do know a lot of women hate on, you know, other women. But I just think it is very harmful to cast a wide net on every Black woman manager, and let alone, you know, if you're going to say like minority manager. And I'm going to react to a TikTok play-by-play. I'm going to stop and go there, and we'll actually just dissect some of the things that the TikToker is saying, because I really don't always agree with what people say, but I like to hear them out. All right, let's go.
Supervisor is going to be a minority, babe. Keep that DEI hire and keep that job offer too. I prefer to work under white men, okay? White, middle-aged, you know, men with a family, you know, AARP eligible, you know, the ones that got the AAA, the ones that eat off the IHOP 55 plus menu, you know what I mean? The Medicare eligible ones, give me that. Give me that. Because as far as I'm concerned, the minorities, they like to make you pay back the dues that they had to pay in 1987 when they first got their job as the model minority. And they want to like make sure that you have to do it too. Meanwhile, white man.
So we'll pause right there. I've never experienced that, right? I've never experienced that from a Black woman, or I've never experienced that from a Black man being a, you know, being a manager to me. So it is interesting to hear that women seem to always share the same sentiment when it comes to that. Why? I have no clue. Now, I share the opposite sentiment. White men are not good managers to me. And when I say good managers, I don't mean that they're being mean to me, right? I mean, there are microaggressions. But when I say they're not good, they are not trying to help me excel in my career. Because you'll see through these comments, a lot of men were saying, hey, I hear everything you're saying, but the reason being for that is you are just not a threat to them. And I'm about to tie this up to some research that I did before this while just figuring out how I was going to tackle this with actually like some factual evidence and not just things I'm being opinionated over. So I'm going to let it rock some more, and then we're going to actually get into some of the numbers that really go against us when it comes to being in management, executive leadership type positions, and why I think propaganda like this is kind of like harmful to the Black women managers who want you to succeed and not wanting you to already have a preconceived notion that they're going to be mean to you.
Hey man, he sees me, he goes, yep, let me give you this special project. What do you need? What's going to advance your career? How can I help you? None of the passive aggressiveness, none of the micromanaging, none of that extra shit, right? Give me Jim, Bob, Bill, give me that. Don't give me the minority, because as far as I'm concerned, anybody that looks like me or identifies as somebody who would be a DEI hire, as far as I'm concerned, I'm not with it. I'm not with it. Y'all.
And I just got to quickly pause it. We already know that white women majority benefit from DEI initiatives. So when you say that, I guess you're also talking about white women not being your manager either. So I don't know. Like, I would love to ask her a little bit more in depth, because I mean, it's always fun. It's, you know, it's charismatic. It's fun. Like, this video got a lot of views, but I just really feel like it's stupid, in my humble opinion. Like, I feel like harmful things like this could possibly be kept to ourselves, or we can have a conversation about it. But I just seen, like, I know most of the black women I know have always said, hey, I agree with this too. And I just really like, that's a small sample size, and we need a really big number of people to really bring nuance and balance to all this, to really kind of settle the score.
All got a chip on y'all shoulder that I personally do not have the brain power to deal with. So as far as I'm concerned, hand me to the nearest white man. Thank you.
And when I just hear that, hand me to the nearest white man, it just icks me out, because it feels like you're looking for them to be a savior to you or something, right? And, you know, they really don't care about y'all. Every time when it comes to election time, you see this when they vote for what they care about. So that's the reason why I kind of like, why do y'all push that so much when it's only in one aspect at work, and aware, like, they will never let you be them. And then outside of work, they don't even care about you like that. And that's the reason why I think that's my biggest gripe with that whole thing. I think that's my biggest gripe about that. So I Googled how many black women hold management positions in corporate America. Now, we need some updated statistics. This was for 4 years ago, but in 2021, 4.3% of managerial positions in the U.S. were held by black women. This is in contrast to the 32.6% of managerial positions held by white women in the same year. While women's representation in the C-suite has increased to 28% from 17% in 2015, the representation of women in color, including black women, remains significantly lower. Black women specifically hold 1.4% of C-suite positions and 1.6% of senior vice president roles. The disparity exists despite black women comprising 7.4% of the U.S. population. Now, the reason why I'm talking about all this kind of stuff is because this is why I feel like it's horrible. It's already not that many black women managers. So to always go on the internet and talk bad about them, like everyone is just horrible, I get that was your experience, right? But no. And so the next thing I Googled was like, hey, well, how many black men hold management positions in corporate? And I couldn't get a direct answer, right? It was more of a high level type of response. It said, black men are significantly underrepresented in management and executive positions within corporate America. While they constitute 7% of managers, their representation decreases further in senior roles like vice president 5% and senior vice president 4%, according to McKinsey. This disparity is even more pronounced at the highest levels, with black individuals holding only a small percentage of CEO positions. And, you know, even going on that other news was saying back in February 28, 2023, black executives hold only 3% of senior management positions. So that is one of the persistent structural issues, because it is very subjective in terms of who gets the opportunity, who does not. Businessman Colbert Narcisse said, if we kind of go through all these numbers, you'll start seeing like the numbers aren't in our favor. And it's one of the reasons why I started this channel. It's one of the reasons why we know the hiring biases are because of, hey, you're most likely to hire somebody that looks like you. So when you say that, I just think it's bad. I think we should try to reframe that. Maybe say that, you know, they have not been the best to me. I don't even know any situations, because women are very passive aggressive. So I don't even know any situations that they ever pull these managers to the side and actually figure out what our issues was. So, and I believe in my episode that I did with Natalie, I think, or either that's something we talked about off screen, but that was, I think, a situation she ran into, and then they actually, no, it wasn't her. It was somebody else I talked to before that was going to come on the show, that didn't come on the show, and they said they kind of ran into the same thing, because I guess the person that was over them just thought they were so young, and they didn't know anything, but then when they kind of said, hey, you know what? Let's step aside. Let's talk. Let's see what the big issue is here. And they found out they were more alike than different, and everything changed. So I don't even know if they even have a conversations with these people on how they were treating them, or they just complaining. And that's the big thing, right? If your manager is doing you a certain way, like really mean to you, micromanagement, all these other stuff, like talk to them, document it. And then you can figure out if it don't ever change, then yeah, sure, go do what you do. But that's what I should do. I just think it's very harmful to spread this rhetoric about Black women managers when and I know you're going to come and say, I'm a Black man. And that's why I'm a champion them every time. They've been nothing but great to me in my career, giving me chances that I probably wouldn't have gotten if somebody else interviewed me. It's already hard enough when you go through a whole interview process in about 3 or 4 months and you only interview with one Black person. So let's think about that. Let's think about how many times you interview and how many times somebody looked like you. So all this stuff adds up. So now you get to work and you say, this person is a horrible manager, when maybe just some things that y'all need to figure out. Maybe, and then also I will say this too, to give y'all some grace, maybe that person was not supposed to be a manager, but somebody just made them be a manager because, and I've heard this trope about Black women, like they stern and they're going to make sure you get your work done. And that sometimes is valued, but it just depends. You can lean on people too much and it doesn't work all the way. So there are a lot of things, and this probably could also, you know, segue into a deeper dive video. Maybe I'll also bring this up again when I have it in the live panel, because I want to hear multiple people's opinions and thoughts on it, and maybe some even research they did and figuring out like what's going on. Because like I said, they're not threatened by you. Like I said, I rarely see Black leadership, let alone women or Black men leadership at the high level with companies I work at. And somebody's gonna say, well, that's because they weren't qualified. Most of the time, Black people are overqualified. There's a comment that I left on the thread, and I said, you know, for every mediocre, you know, manager or something like that, there's an overqualified like Black person somewhere like mad on the team because like, hey, I can do this better than you. We see it all the time, right? And so now other people will say, well, why are we complaining? Let's try to do our own things. And so you do see us try to start like our own businesses, but I really don't think we're starting some of the right businesses as far as to really scale and take over and be power players in some of these industries that we're really needed in and we could just start hiring more of. So that's the thing. I think there's this, you know, negative connotation about like working with Black people and all these different things, but both things could be true. Yes, there could be issues, but two, sometimes the people were never even taught anything. They just went straight into leading. I think the big issue is you got to learn how to serve before you can actually lead people. So I don't know, but that's my little rant on that situation right there. Cause I just hate it. I always chime in every time. Cause I'm trying to like, nah, don't, because the people who are saying that y'all one day may be Black women managers. So do you want people to already have a guard up against you and treat you a certain way because they think you're going to be bad to them based on what they've heard? That's going to make it harder for you. You're going to have to kind of set some boundaries in the beginning. So that's kind of what I think about that. All right. So I think some of the bigger things is I want to talk about the last week we had, we already talked about the Xbox Game Showcase. Now I want to get into WWDC and about like the biggest thing, like, Apple is streamlining all their operating systems from like watchOS, what is it, iPadOS, iOS, macOS, I believe too. And so all of them are now going to be like 26. So now it's iOS 26, watchOS 26, iPad 26. That's one thing. But I want to get into the article and see how people are feeling about Liquid Glass and some of the features that they're adding to iOS 26. So let's share that. All of the new features coming to Apple's iOS apps. At WWDC 2025, Apple unveiled a series of new features that will launch with iOS 26 this fall across its apps. These include significant updates like call screening, more travel-friendly features in Wallet, highly requested group chat features and messages. Phone, so call screening, lets you determine what a call is about before picking it up. When you get a call from an unknown number, call screening will automatically answer silently in the background when the caller shares their name and reason for their call. And the iPhone will ring and you can view their responses before deciding whether to pick it up or ignore it. Now, Android has been had this. I've had this in my Pixel for years. So it's one of the things like, I've been had this. This is not revolutionary. So I want to go through something else. See if they got messages. Members in group chats on messages can now create polls to better plan events and make quick decisions. Apple Intelligence will also detect when a poll might be useful and suggest the user start one. Plus, group chats can now create custom backgrounds for chats. and see type of indicators, and you can now request send and receive Apple Cash and group chats. Okay, so I think that's pretty cool. Apple Cash, custom backgrounds, all stuff Android's probably been able to do for a while. Not the, it might have been able to do poll, maybe like Samsung messages. The app now also lets you screen messages from unknown senders. Messages from unknown senders will appear in a dedicated folder where you can mark the number as known, ask for more information, delete the message. Okay. Apple Music. I don't think like Apple Maps. Let's see if this is cool. Apple Maps is going to get better at understanding your daily commute. It will now use on-device intelligence to start showing you the preferred routes when headed home or to the office. The app will notify you of delays and other alternative routes too. But I thought it was already doing that. Apple Wallet is introducing the ability for people to store a digital version of their passport called a digital ID. Now, this is pretty cool. The tech giant notes that this won't be a replacement for your actual passport, but it can be used in apps that need to verify age and identity and are supported TSA checkpoints for real ID implementation. In effect, digital ID will give you another way to present an ID in person during domestic travel. And FaceTime. Like phone and messages, FaceTime will leverage live translation to let people communicate with each other in different languages. When you're talking to someone in a different language, FaceTime will display translated captions so that the two of you can understand each other. I think that's pretty good for language barriers. And I think that's pretty dope. After receiving significant user backlash for the Photos app's redesign in iOS 18, Apple is bringing back a tab interface to Photos and collections. You'll find your favorite albums and the ability to search across your library. The library tab makes it easier to scroll through recent photos. The iPhone's camera app will showcase the two capture modes they use the most on main screen, photo and video, to reveal additional modes like portrait mode and cinematic mode. You can swipe your finger left or right, and Apple Podcasts. All right, so this is cool. This is giving a breakdown of iOS 26. Like I said, I think the cool thing for me was the FaceTime thing, and I guess messages. I think those are like the two biggest things that I thought would be pretty cool for iOS 26. Like I said, I don't know. Like Apple's phones work, but at this point, what are they doing to be the innovators that they were when iPhone dropped? When iPhone dropped, everything stood still and everybody had to catch up. That's literally, and then Samsung and Google have caught up now. And so now they're kind of just like, okay, I mentioned this cool, but now we got RCS. So what's next? And speaking of that, let's actually talk about Android 16 update. I actually just updated my phone to Android 16. Google rolls out Android 16, the Pixel phones, unveils AI-powered edit suggestions for Google Photos. So this is probably not like some just crazy update, but I want to look at it. So here goes some of the improvements. Android 16 now features iOS-style live notifications on the lock screen for real-time updates and Google's new Material 3 expressive design language. There are new capabilities for safeguarding against theft and scams, along with an updated advanced protection mode to maintain security and privacy for public figures. That's pretty cool. Android 16 also adds support for Bluetooth low energy so that you can use them instead of your phone's mic for better quality. You can also control volume on your device from your phone with new native controls. Let's see what's something cool. Google Photos has an array of new features and other supported releases. Soon, the app will be able to suggest editing tools like erase, move, or reimagine for portions of an image. Other Android improvements include the ability to favorite devices in Google Home app support and pay for public transit using Google Wallet on Wear OS devices so you don't need to take out your phone. So let's see these Pixel June fixtures. Slow down, man. Let's see what these Pixel June features are. A new Pixel VIP widget lets you view interactions with your favorites in your contact list. It shows your last calls and messages with the person, including any you receive from WhatsApp, and updates such as birthday and location if the contact chooses to share them. Pixel phones are also getting more detailed captions for video content, including live streams. You'll see captions that describe if someone is whispering, yawning, or clearing their throat. Cool. Elsewhere, you can create custom stickers using text prompts directly from Google's Gboard keyboard. Google's adding support for AI-powered summaries in French and German to the Recorder app, and users in Australia will get Android's emergency SOS satellite connectivity feature. Let's see. I want to see if there's something pretty cool in here. All right, so that's all that. I know they also did some stuff with Google Messages. So you saw kind of like up here. Let's see. Yeah, so it's a stupid like group chat to RCS, AI power edit suggestions, which I think they already had that stuff. But I just wanted to read some stuff like that for my Android peeps out there and the people who got their Pixels. You know, I ain't never going to leave us out for sure. Now, you will say like, well, iOS 26 was much better than a Pixel update, which I agree. But I mean, this is just something that's an iterative update. I don't think they're probably going to have like maybe Android 17 or 18 is going to be like some bigger that they're going to be ready for when we get, you know, better with AI, AR, all the different cool stuff. But I think I want to talk about something that people will say probably affected them, and that would be the UNFI disruption. Major U.S. grocery distributor warns of disruption after cyber attack. United Natural Foods, UNFI, a major distributor of groceries to Whole Foods and other retailers, said on Monday that it was hit by a cyber attack, warning of disruptions to its ability to fulfill and distribute customer orders. Now, I'm just going to stop it right there, because we always just focus on accounts getting hacked and all this other stuff, exfiltration of data. Let's focus on people not being able to get things they need to survive. Supply chain attacks, essentially what it is. Sending down their supply to food that they need to get to the grocery store so people can buy food. And also it's costing everybody money. UNFI said in a Monday filing with the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission that it became aware of unauthorized access to its IT systems last Thursday and began shutting down portions of its network. The filing added that the company has implemented workarounds for certain operations in order to continue servicing its customers where possible, but noted that the intrusion has caused ongoing disruptions to its business operations. The Providence, Rhode Island-based company is one of the largest grocery distributors. The Providence, Rhode Island-based company is one of the largest grocery distributors in North America, selling fresh produce, goods, and food products to more than 30,000 stores and supermarket locations across the U.S. and Canada. UNFI also serves as the primary distributor to Whole Foods, the Amazon-owned grocery chain. Last year, the two companies extended their long-running contract until May 2032. When reached by TechCrunch, UNFI spokesperson Kristen Jimenez would not describe the nature of the cyber attack or say if the intruder had demanded a ransom from the company. "We are assessing the unauthorized activity and working to restore our systems to safely bring them back online," said Jimenez, adding that the incident was reported to law enforcement. Okay, so that's on their end. So as you can see, they suffered an incident. They don't even know the scope of it, but it impacted the business operations and they have to shut IT systems down. Now, this is pretty much when this comes out a week ago. I definitely want to see what they have done since then. And if they even said, normally in these articles, they'll say they brought on a retainer or they hit up CrowdStrike or Mania to look into this stuff a little bit more in depthly, because it seems like they definitely do not have the detections that they need in place. Because of, I think I was reading another article related to this and saying, like, we don't know who does the security for them. So that'd be interesting. Now, I want to actually go to what Whole Foods is saying. Whole Foods warns a shortage after cyber attack at its primary distributor. So Whole Foods told its employees that the ongoing outages and disruptions at its primary distributor, United Natural Foods, may take several days to resolve. Ah, man. So they told them it would be about a week. So it's been about a week since then. Whole Foods said in the communication to staff that the cyber attack is affecting UNFI's ability to select and ship products from their warehouses and that this will impact our normal delivery schedules and product availability. The missive to staff included instructions to limit communications with customers, the only single approved customer talking point that Whole Foods employees can share with customers, according to communications that grocery giant is having temporary supply challenges. Yeah, that's the verbiage that they want to say because they don't want to put people in panic. Because if you say, yeah, our distributor, you know, experienced like a hack attack, like what happened. And I didn't even think about this and it just came to me now. This is that all the third party stuff because, hey, was Whole Foods information involved in this security breach. Anybody else's information, did they get any data? That's when it starts becoming tricky. That's why you should just spend the money up front, because now everybody losing money. Let's see. When reached by TechCrunch, Whole Foods spokesperson Nathan Simbala said, "We are working to restock our shelves as quickly as possible and apologize for any inconvenience this may have caused for customers." Now, let's see if we got anything else. Okay. So, yeah, as you can see, that's the difference too, guys. When there's a breach going on, a lot of times you're going to get very clear and concise verbiage to share with people so they do not panic. Anytime, even when you have to report a breach to like either like executive management or say you got a customer or client or something, you're still going to use vague enough information to not make everybody just start running around with chickens with a head cut off. Many of you guys are familiar with Discord. Hell, I have a Discord server. So it's very popular amongst everybody. Everybody uses the chat for their Twitch and everything else. But I thought I wanted to bring awareness to people and just kind of tell you, keep your head on the swivel for these specific attacks if you see it going against you. So Discord flaw lets hackers reuse expired invites in malware campaign. Hackers are hijacking expired or deleted Discord invite links to redirect users to malicious sites that deliver remote access trojans and information stealing malware. The campaign relies on a flaw in the Discord invitation system to leverage multi-stage infections that evade multiple antivirus engines. Discord invite links are URLs that allow someone to join a specific Discord server. They contain the invite code, which is a unique identifier that grants access to a server and can be temporary, permanent, or custom. Vanity links available to level 3 servers paying for special perks. As part of the perks for level 3 Discord servers, administrators can create a personal invite code. For regular servers, Discord generates random invite links automatically, and the chance of one repeating itself is very low. However, hackers notice that when the level 3 server loses its boost status, the custom invite code becomes available and can be reclaimed by another server. Researchers at cybersecurity company Checkpoint say that this is also true in the case of expired temporary invites or deleted permanent invitation links. They say that the mechanism for creating custom invite links surprisingly lets you reuse expired temporary invite codes and, in some cases, deleted permanent invite codes. Now, in this picture, for the people that's listening, it has invite friends to like a channel call test, and it's showing the Discord link. And then the red box, it says your invite link expires in 7 days. Now you go down to the screen below that, it says custom invite link. So it's doing the same thing. And what you found is they are exploiting the issue. So in the top picture, the last part of the link is UZWGPXUZ, and it says your invite will expire in 7 days. So now people go to custom invite link, it's unlocked, and it says the same thing. It gives you the same thing I just read, and it says the server is now accessible to everyone at that Discord link. Hijacking a temporary invite code and reusing it in a vanity link. So all they did was they were able to take it with a link that somebody else used and be able to utilize it for a different server on their own machine. So interesting. So they're making it seem like somebody's joining a server that they thought they were joining, but they're not. Additionally, the researchers say that Discord's faulty mechanism does not modify the expiration time of an already generated temporary invitation code when reusing it as a permanent invitation link. Users often mistakenly believe that by simply checking this box, they have made the existing invite permanent. And it was this misunderstanding that was exploited in the attack we observed. And an invite code with lowercase letters and digits cannot be registered as long as it is active. However, if the code has uppercase letters, it can be reused in vanity links with lowercase, even if the original is still valid. Checkpoint researchers explained that this is possible because Discord stores and compares vanity links in lowercase. As a result, the same code with lower and uppercase letters is valid for two separate servers at the same time. That's crazy. Just like having a skeleton key. Attackers are monitoring deleted or expired Discord invitations and use them in a campaign that's impacted 1,300 users in the US, UK, France, the Netherlands, Germany, based on Checkpoint's download count of the malicious payloads. The researchers say that the cyber criminals are hijacking Discord invite links from legitimate communities and sharing them to social media or official community websites. To add credibility to the deceit, hackers designed a malicious service to look authentic. The malicious Discord service only show a single channel to the visitor, verify, and the bot prompts the user to go through a verification process. So here's where, even if you fall for it, you should be able to realize that this isn't like legitimate. Like normally when you join Discord, you'll see a whole bunch of channels, but maybe you have to go through like a verification check. That's just like the rules and these other things. And then it'll, you know, you'll be able to access all the other channels. But if you go into a server with one channel, you got to be like, not funny, haha, funny, weird. You got to think like that, because if you see the screenshot, you can tell like, hey, this is odd. So when the people go through the verification process, the users are tricked into manually opening Windows Run dialog and pasting a PowerShell command, which they had already copied to the clipboard for execution. So here's the thing too. Anything telling you to copy a PowerShell command and paste it anywhere is automatically a red flag and you should not do it. You're just pretty much given access to your machine by then. And AV is not going to catch it too late because you're expected to be on a computer already. And it's not like you got an EDR tool on your system to where it's more intricate than what you're going to have on a basic AV. So if you do this, you're already good as got. So once you do this, it triggers a multi-stage infection involving PowerShell downloaders, obfuscated C++ loaders, and VB script files. The final payloads are downloaded from legitimate Bitbucket software collaboration and file hosting services. Async Rat delivered as A-Client EXE. This version of the malware that uses Pastebin to fetch its C2 address dynamically. Its capabilities include file operations, key logging, and webcam microphone access. So this is the other one too, where if you got a webcam or something like that, put some tape or something over it. Now your mic gonna be a little bit different. You got a mic on your computer, but you got external mics and plug them, turn the things off, so at least they can't access that. Skull Stealer delivered at Skull EXE. This is an info stealer that targets browser credentials, cookies, Discord tokens, and cryptocurrency wallet data. Injects JavaScript to steal mnemonic phrases and passwords using Discord webhooks. Chromecats, a custom version of the open source tool delivered at CKS.exe that can steal cookies and passwords. A scheduled task is also added on the host to rerun the malware loader every 5 minutes, the researchers discovered. And this, I love like when they do these diagrams. So as you see right here, you have the PowerShell downloader, and it's the first stage. So it's the GitHub. Now, first stage right here, you got the Skull Stealer Discord webhook. Second stage, downloader from the Bitbucket stuff. Now you got the Async Rat. Six, the runner. Actually, this is pretty cool. So 1, 2, 3, 4. So two at the same time is doing the second stage of this EXE, which is doing the Async. And then three is doing the runner. And you got the five. I mean, the four, then the five, then all this other stuff. And I can't see some of it, guys, because like the way my screen is. To defend against this threat, it's recommended that Discord users avoid trusting old invite links, especially those for months-old posts. Treat verification requests with extra caution and never run copy PowerShell commands that you don't fully understand. Additionally, Discord server administrators are recommended to use permanent invites, which are more difficult to hijack. Yeah, all the stuff I already said before we got to the end of that article. And that's what I would tell anybody to do. Don't trust anything that's telling you that. If you don't understand, you literally could Google, like, hey, and there are different things. Like you could take that PowerShell script, you could throw it in something like CyberChef, and it'll look at it. And then actually, now you may not be able to interpret it, but you could take the output of it, throw it in Google or something like that, line by line, and say, hey, what does this mean? And now AI will like translate these different things for you. So that's something you could think about as well. I want to talk about 23andMe. You guys know 23andMe was hacked. DNA testing service 23andMe has undergone serious upheaval in the recent months, creating concerns for 15 million customers who entrusted the company with their personal biological information. After filing for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection in March, the company became the center of a bidding war that ended Friday when co-founder and, I guess you say, Wojcicki, I don't know how you say that, said she successfully reacquired control through her nonprofit TTAM Research Institute for $305 million. Now, we're not here to do a deep dive on that company, but I'm pretty sure it's no good. I mean, that's just what I'm thinking. So the bankruptcy proceedings have sent shockwaves through genetic testing industry and among privacy advocates, with security experts and lawmakers urging customers to take immediate action to safeguard their data. The company's interim CEO revealed this week that 1.9 million people, around 15% of 23andMe's customer base, have already requested their genetic data to be deleted from the company's servers. The situation became more complex last week after more than two dozen states filed lawsuits challenging the sale of customers' private data, arguing that 23andMe must obtain explicit consent before transferring or selling personal information to any new entity. Now, I'm just going to get to the cool part is how to delete your 23andMe data. And let me share that in case people are using that. Honestly, I never cared about any of these platforms and sending my information to them because, for one, how do I know they're telling me the truth? Bro, I can send my stuff to anybody and they can tell me I'm connected to something else. So I never believed that they were telling me the truth. Come on now. Think about who runs these companies. Why would they tell you the truth about who you belong to? How to delete your 23andMe data. To delete your data from 23andMe, you need to log into your account, navigate to settings, scroll down to the section labeled 23andMe data, click the view option and scroll to delete data section. Select the permanently delete data button. You will then receive an email from 23andMe with a link that will allow you to confirm your deletion request. You can choose to download a copy of your data before deleting it. There's an important caveat, as 23andMe's privacy policy states that the company and its labs will retain your genetic information, date of birth, and sex as required for compliance with applicable legal obligations. The policy continues, 23andMe will also retain limited information related to your account and data deletion requests, including but not limited to your email address, account deletion requests, identifier communications related to inquiries or complaints, and legal agreements for a limited period of time as required by law, contractual obligations, and or necessary for the establishment, exercise, or defense of legal claims for an audit and compliance purposes. So that's cool and all, but just because they said they deleted it don't mean they really did it. And it's still there. How to destroy your 23andMe test sample and revoke permissions for your data to be used for research. If you previously opted to have your saliva sample and DNA stored by 23andMe, you can change the settings to revoke your permission, go into your 23andMe account settings page, and then navigate to preferences. In addition, if you previously agreed to 23andMe third-party researchers using your genetic data and sample for research, you can withdraw consent from the research and product consent sections in your account settings. While you can reverse that consent, there's no way for you to delete that information. All right, so that's that. Like I said, you can try to delete your stuff, but for me, they already got it. It's one of those risk acceptances. Like, we use the internet. They already got our information. You just got to don't put anything that you don't want nobody to know on there. That's how I feel about it. And all these other companies, they don't safeguard our data anyway, so people got access to that. So you know what it is. But I hope y'all enjoyed this episode. Also, like I was talking about, the job market, Q3 is still heating up if you have the right skill sets. And I would say, I'm gonna leave y'all with this. Your LinkedIn is actually a little bit more important than your resume, because that's actually how you're getting found a lot of these times, by having a good LinkedIn. So if you don't got recruiters banging down your inbox and hitting you up for jobs that's paying a lot of money, it's your LinkedIn, dog. And I can help you with that. Visit the link that I have in the description on how you can work with me to get a 90K plus cybersecurity job. You've been struggling getting cybersecurity and you have experience. Or if you're a person that wants to transition just into an IT role and you need help with that, we can help you there too. But I appreciate everybody. Let me know how you feel about this episode in the comments. As always, let's stay textual. And until next time, peace.